morning, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, who's actually on her way. And our guest today is Cece Cox. Cece is the Executive Director and CEO of Resource Center Dallas. Welcome, Cece.
Thanks, David. Always glad to see you.
It's great to see you. It's been a while since you've been here on the show with us, but I do get to see you outside of this every once in a while, and I've been nagging you. When are you going to come on our show again? You haven't been on, and we have this real convenient time now, just 7 in the morning on Wednesday morning. It's real easy for our guests to be here. I know.
That's okay, right. I was so motivated by that time.
I know.
But, you know, once I was it's not really that much later than when I normally have gotten up. Yeah. So once I wrap my mind around it, it's good to
you
go.
Just said, good. Okay, so we'll do this. Lots going on. Several new I don't know if we call them advances, but new stuff going on with HIV. Big news today is that Jen Tyrell, who's the ousted Cub Scout mom, is in town, and she's here to present a petition to the Boy Scouts about what she's in support of what she's done. And the Boy Scouts came out with this ridiculous statement yesterday. You have a new building that you're planning, all kinds of stuff for us to talk about. So why don't we start with let's start with the news. Jen Tyrell's in town. What that story is she was ousted as a Cub Scout leader earlier this year. Her Cub Scout troop is in rural Ohio, somewhere near Wheeling, West Virginia. And she was assured when she first signed on, she was assured that, don't worry about your being a lesbian. Certainly it's local option type thing here, and we're just not going to be concerned with it. All of a sudden, other people got wind of it, and she is out. So what do you think of that, Cece?
Well, I think it's crazy, in a word. Mm-hmm. First of all, she's not the scout, and scouting is for the children. And under the goals of adults teaching them good moral values, leadership skills, ability to interact and socialize with other children in a friendly setting, and to oust a parent just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's so many ways you could go with this conversation. So there's that. And then the other piece is that what kind of a value message is that sending? When some people can be a member of Scouts and some can't, I don't understand what sexual orientation has to do with anything in the context of scouting. And, of course, that's always been the argument that they have put forth, that we're somehow morally less than.
You know, one of the things I think that's interesting about that also is that in the Scouts, they have a very specific policy about talking about sex with the kids, and that's that we don't do it. When sex comes up, the Boy Scout policy is we refer it to the home, the church, and the school because they're better equipped to discuss it. So it's not something that's supposed to come up anyway. And one thing that Jen says is, you know, it never came up with us until I was thrown out, and then all of the parents in the troop had to discuss sex with their kids.
Yeah.
So they forced the issue about something that Jen didn't want to talk about, the other parents didn't want to talk about. Nobody really had any interest, because the kids, her troop was 7 years old.
Right.
You know, it's something that the kids knew. Yeah, you know, his parent, he has two moms. We have a mom and a dad. This one just has a mom. And it was nothing they wanted to discuss. You know, you're a parent.
Right.
When did you first discuss that your kid had four moms?
Yeah, exactly. David knows too much, because he has two moms and now he has two stepmoms. So he's the most mothered child in the history of the United States, probably, and I think he likes it. When did we discuss it? Well, we gave what we thought were age-appropriate messages to him from the very beginning. And when we brought him home from the hospital as a little baby, of course, it's not like he can talk back to us, but, you know, we told him he had two moms and we loved him. And as soon as you know, children have different developmental milestones, and they start asking questions or seeking their way to figure out how they fit into their social group, mm-hmm. and they start to notice, oh, my family looks different than some of my friends' families look like at preschool. And so we'd have conversations at those various times. So we always told him that he had two moms. One day he sat at the dining room table, or at the kitchen table. We were about to have dinner, and he plops down. He must have been about three. And he said, I have two moms. So, you know, it's an ongoing conversation as you go through the child's life. And for him, it has not been something that has caused him any distress. He has never exhibited any anxiety about that. Mm-hmm. And it may be him, because he's a kid that goes with the flow pretty well. Number two, what options does he have? I mean, we're his family, and he mm-hmm. that's how he grew up, so that's his normal, mm-hmm. his right. how the world works. And number three, we were always proactive about his school environment. So whatever school he was going to go to, we went ahead and would talk to the administrators and such and say, hey, this is our family. Do you anticipate any problems? Do you have any other families that look like us? You know, that type of thing. So we sort of ran the traps in advance. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, for this group of seven-year-olds, first of all, you don't need to talk about sex to seven-year-olds when you're talking about gay people. Mm-hmm. You can if you want, but you know, there's a lot of other things to talk about too, like that family structure and how families don't all look alike. Some two women, some two men, some mom and dad, some grandparents, blah blah. And it just seems like the Scouts, among other missteps, this is a huge missed opportunity, because if you have a qualified parent who wants to be engaged with their child's life, and you have a qualified adult who wants to contribute to the scout troop, but you're going to get rid of them just because of their sexual orientation, it's a real missed opportunity to help those kids understand the world and to be loved and nurtured.
And really, I would think for your son, for Jen's kids, the idea of having two moms isn't that odd, with divorce among heterosexuals being over 50%. Lots of them get remarried, so you have the mom and the stepmom, so they have two moms, too. That concept just isn't that alien to most kids anymore.
Right. Kids are very familiar with that, I think. And as long as loving adults are raising a child, mm-hmm. kids don't really care.
Mm-hmm. And they don't. But the ones who do care are the Boy Scouts. Now, here's what they did yesterday. I had done a story last Friday in Dallas Voice about the Boy Scouts, and in researching the story, I spoke to some representatives over at the Boy Scouts, and they said that the policy of excluding gays from participating in Boy Scouts was not under consideration. They are not reviewing the policy, despite what several board members would like them to do, because they do have board members who are CEOs of corporations that have full equality in their corporations, full benefits for gay and lesbian employees, full non-discrimination policies, everything else that you would expect them to have, just equality for all of their employees. And in other words, if their straight employees get health benefits for other members of their family, gee, so do their gay employees. Everybody gets the same thing. It's just a normal corporate way of life in the 2000s. It's just the way big companies work. And some of these people are on the board of the Boy Scouts, and so they've been pushing the Boy Scouts, some of these board members, to update their policies a little bit. So the Boy Scouts 2 weeks ago, no, it's not under review. Yesterday, when it was announced that Jen Tyrell was in town, they also announced that for 2 years we've been studying this policy, even though 2 weeks ago they weren't. Now they've been studying it for two years. But now they've been studying it. They had a committee of 11 people. No, we won't tell you who was on the committee, but it was a broad, diverse group studying this policy. And from this broad, diverse group, they all came to the same conclusion that we should keep the policy. Now I'm certainly not one who would push my opinion, but what do you think? I would never say he's so full of...
No, you certainly wouldn't say that.
No, I would never say that.
And since I'm on the air, I won't either.
Yeah.
But, wow.
Mm-hmm.
broad and diverse group. I'd love to know who's on there and who's the definition of broad and diverse.
What he's saying really is we had some people on this committee who believed in full diversity and inclusion, and they came to the conclusion. All of a sudden, they decided, you know, we really don't want gay people in this organization. He expects us to believe that.
Right, and I suppose they haven't put forth any substantiation for how they came to their conclusion, right?
No, because what my question to them was, and they won't answer this, is what happened, what information did you get that that brought you to the conclusion that your organization would be better off by excluding parents, by throwing out gay scouts who'd been with your program for 10 years or more, earned their Eagle Scout badges, and they've been such loyal members. It's been, scouting has been part of their lives for more than half their lives. What was it that you learned in this that they'd be better off thrown out on their butts?
I'm guessing they're drawing from some 1993 study done by Joseph Nicolosi, who's been thrown out of every professional association he ever claimed that he was a member of. I mean, we sort of have to laugh because it's just so harmful that I don't know. I mean, people will justify something if that's what they want to do. We all know that. So they don't want to change.
I'm just flat out calling them liars that there was no study.
So, that's a possibility, too.
Yeah. 2 weeks ago, there was no review going on. All of a sudden, there's a two-week study. And one way or the other, these are liars. So apparently, is that one of the values of the Boy Scouts?
Right.
Is that being morally straight?
Right. I just don't know what it means to be straight anymore.
I don't get it. Okay, so here's the other one that I know they have a problem with, and that is the problem of pedophilia, especially among the scout leaders at scouting camps and things like that. Okay, so do you find in your vast lesbian experience here, because we are talking to, like, Dallas's head lesbian as CEO of...
I would slap you if I could reach across that desk.
I understand. That's easy.
I'll hold your mic.
Thank you.
You're not used to this at 7 in the morning, right?
That's right.
How much of a problem is pedophilia among lesbians and young boys? See, that's what they're saying.
I'm not aware of any statistics that would show that is a problem.
But isn't that what they're saying as one of the justifications for excluding gay moms from participating in Cub Scout troops? When they are bringing up that problem and all kinds of studies and all kinds of records they have on all these people, isn't that kind of like, gee, if we want a safe group here... Of all the groups, that would be the safest.
Right. I mean, pedophilia doesn't have anything to do with sexual orientation. It's a behavior. It's something that can be treated. It's a mental health issue. Mm-hmm. And it's complicated. I'm not an expert on it, but it's just not related to sexual orientation whatsoever. It's a behavior. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, they are... of a mindset, apparently, that is pulling on old stereotypes and misinformation and myth and using that to say it's in the best interest of the children or it would be damaging to have gay and lesbian people involved in leadership positions. And in reality, again, they're missing an opportunity for if the leaders of these people are qualified, you know, just on the normal things that you would need to be skilled at in being a leader, they're missing out on an opportunity for engaged adults who want to serve their communities and interact and help raise these children up with good values. And they're missing an opportunity for everyone who's involved in scouting to understand a broader diversity of the world.
Right.
You know, I mean, the world is growing increasingly diverse, and we've got to, we serve our children well by helping them understand that.
Speaking of the world becoming more diverse and things changing, just before the show, we were talking a little bit about what happens if Romney is elected, what happens if Obama is reelected. All of the changes that have happened under Obama, they've been real incremental. There hasn't been the omnibus gay rights, here are your 1,000 rights that straight people have, the special rights that straight married couples have that you don't get. There hasn't been the omnibus bill. There's been several laws. There have been several presidential executive orders. And each one by the gay community has kind of been met with, okay, yeah, so we have gays in the military now, but what about employment non-discrimination, rather than are being able to just celebrate one big victory.
You know, I think there's so much progress that needs to be made, and there are times when our community feels so beaten down. And I'm not criticizing that. It happens to me, we're in a position where we have to justify our existence, and it's demeaning, it's tedious, it's exhausting. So I think that sometimes we're sort of in that mode, even when really positive things happen. I do think it's important to celebrate and put things in context. And while we do not have employment non-discrimination passed at the federal level, and we do not have marriage equality, and those things definitely need to happen, the Obama administration has overseen the implementation of so many changes that our community may not always be aware of because they've been done through the administration. But I'm concerned that a different administration could roll those things back and could work heavily against us. So a couple of examples are that relationships are now recognized, same-sex relationships are now recognized in healthcare settings. And there was a lawsuit that Lambda Legal brought forth a couple of years ago, more than a couple of years ago, from a couple in Florida, where it was two lesbians and they had kids. They were on vacation. One of the women fell ill, got her back to a hospital in Florida, and the hospital would not let the partner and the children come see the ill woman, and she died. Mm-hmm. So she died alone, not being able to say goodbye. They had a power of attorney, so they had documents drafted up, which is all we can do to try to protect ourselves, and the hospital wouldn't recognize it. So the Obama administration under, I think it was Health and Human Services, passed regulations such that that's no longer the case, and we must be recognized as partners and able to, the caregiver for one another in a hospital setting, even without documentation in some situations.
Right.
That's huge.
Sure.
Now, it's not the same recognition as marriage equality. Mm-hmm. That would be the ultimate, so we would stop having to have these piecemeal battles, but that's just one example.
Do you know, I got several calls and emails from several people because I was writing something about touting it as being, you know, really a wonderful advance, and they said, well, you know, how often does that happen? It happens to everybody, though. It doesn't happen often, hopefully. I mean, and you might be the one who's the patient. You might be the one who's the family of the patient. But it happens to everybody. And that it's huge when that happens because it's when you're at your most vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only does it happen to people who are couples, but the impact has the opportunity to reach across an entire system. I mean, when this happens, someone is in a healthcare system. And so there have been guidelines issued. The Joint Commission, which oversees hospitals, has issued guidelines about, now that this mandate has come out, then how do we create a culture in the hospitals and training among employees and everything that needs to be in place so that hospital employees, which, you know, who knows how many thousands of people are employed by hospitals across the United States, have to understand and implement this policy. So it's not just happening to a couple in some random hospital. Mm-hmm. It has the impact of happening across entire systems.
Sure. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here with CeCe Cox and the late Patty Fink. We'll be joining us momentarily. We'll be back with more right after this.
You are listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
KNON thanks Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERImaging.com.
GoodSearch.com provides a way for you to support nonprofits like KNON with your online shopping and dining. GoodSearch.com offers a downloadable toolbar for searching from your computer called GoodApp, so your purchases can go to support KNON. With Good Dining, every time you go out to eat at participating restaurants, then a portion of what you spend gets donated to KNON. Registering is easy at GoodSearch.com, and KNON 89.3 is the name to enter in your account settings for charity selection. Support KNON with your online shopping and dining at GoodSearch.com.
Tune in every Monday morning at 7 a.m. to KNON's newest talk program, Jim Schutz, Get Off My Lawn, sponsored by the Dallas Observer. Jim Schutz, Get Off My Lawn brings you the story not covered by Dallas's other news outlets. Jim will be taking your calls and featuring special guests.
This is Jim Schutz. I'll be your host for Get Off My Lawn every Monday morning at 7 a.m. on KNON.
Hey, blues fans. Sonny Boy Mark from Texas Blues Radio here inviting you to the third annual KNON Harmonica Blowout, Sunday, July 29th at Poor David's Pub in Dallas. For this year's show, we have, just back from another European tour, Delta Groove recording artist and harmonica player extraordinaire R.J. Michaud. From right here in our own backyard, the legendary Hash Brown Band with very special guests, the one and only Mike Morgan. We'll have harmonica maestro himself, Mr. Paul Harrington, and his band, Kent Viceroy and the Super Kings, with special guest, former Marsha Ball guitarist Pat Boyack. Also, the David Vincent John Ellis Band, and the KNON All-Stars featuring KNON Blues DJs J-Mac and yours truly, Sonny Boy Mark, with special guest, Blues Music Award winner and former Zach Harmon harp man Jeff Stone. Barbecue dinner will be provided by the good folks at Backcountry Barbecue. Doors open at 4:30. Show begins at 5 p.m. Advance tickets available online at KNON.org or at Bill's Records in Dallas and at Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie. That's the third annual KNON Harmonica Blowout, Sunday, July 29th at Poor David's Pub, located at 1313 South Lamar in Dallas. It will blow you away.
This is a random person, and I don't listen to Lambda Weekman on 89.3 KNON FM Dallas.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here with the late Patty Fink. Welcome, Patty.
Thank you very much.
And
good to be back.
It is good to have you back. And we're here with CC Cox.
Duties, but,
I know you do, so sit over there. Stay away from all of us. We have CC Cox with us. She's the CEO and Executive Director of Resource Center Dallas. Just tell us briefly. Everybody doesn't know what Resource Center Dallas is. They should. But it's been around for 30 years, and what is it?
Indeed, and not that everybody should. I'm always glad to talk about it. It's an organization that operates a gay and lesbian community center. It's the fourth largest center in the United States, and we provide services to people with HIV. And we empower the community through programs aimed at health and wellness, families and communities, and education and advocacy.
So this is Dallas, why only the fourth largest?
Why only the fourth?
Why only the fourth largest, right?
We'll be the third largest one of these days.
Okay,
I don't know. There are some other big cities in the United States.
not my problem.
You might have heard of them.
Not my problem. I don't use that as an excuse.
Well, Florida, you know.
I don't use that as an excuse. Ours should be bigger and better. Actually, it will be.
It will be, right. We're in a capital campaign and intend to break ground in 2014. And if construction goes well on schedule, that means occupy the building in 2015.
When will be the third largest?
Which will double our space, right? It'll double our space and allow us to serve the community in a broader way, in a more meaningful way, and offer new programming to have deeper impact.
Great. Taddy, you wanted to talk about Chick-fil-A.
I just think it's interesting that this saga continues after all these years and that so many people in our community are so surprised.
Mm-hmm.
when I remember us talking about this at length in the early 2000s or whatever, I can't remember the exact year, when they sent a kid's meal home with customers with a family research council or focus on the family DVD in the package, like the toy that the kid would get in their kid's meal. And, you know, I mean, it was bizarre then, and they've never made no secret of their anti-gay beliefs and their anti-gay funding for anti-gay activities. And here they've you know, come out again in the news that they are, in fact, anti-gay. And yesterday, the gentleman who is one of the family members that founded the company and currently chief operating officer confirmed that the company is... considers itself anti-gay. So, you know, if you're in the GLBT community, it'd be a good time not to go to Chick-fil-A. You don't need the you know, the fried chicken sandwich with the one pickle, you know.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM, brought to you by Chick-fil-A.
Right.
Right.
But there are so many reasons not to go to Chick-fil-A. There's better stuff, but... Anyway, it's among many that we are... we should probably compile a running list.
That would be great. We have Domino's on our family list because my son requests it frequently. I'm like, no, and here's why. So now he just mentions it to tease me.
I'm glad he's gotten to that point.
Yeah. It's teachable moment.
I remember years ago when we were protesting ExxonMobil and Julian Potter was down, and we had her on the show at the time, and she said she was the... LGBT liaison in the Clinton White House. And she said that she asked one of her interns at her day job, you know, who, you know, do you drink Coors beer? And she goes, no. And she goes, well, why? Why do you not drink it? And she goes, I don't know why. I just know I'm not supposed to. And, you know, and she said, that's where we want everybody.
Right.
On these companies.
You turn the opposite way when you see an ExxonMobil. I think Coors is... Turn the corner.
Oh, yeah, they definitely. I mean, Mary Cheney was their liaison, you know, person.
Right, but yeah, right. Get that ingrained.
The lesbian side of Mary Cheney was their liaison, not.
And now she's apparently married, a married lesbian.
That's
yes,
right.
She is.
Just
with the blessing,
in the last week or two, right?
Right, with the blessing of her father, but not her party.
You know, that's one of those things.
Small steps.
Well, it is, but you know what? He was never anti-gay.
No, he actually wasn't, yeah.
No.
But he didn't do anything within his vast power to change his party and his party's policies.
I didn't say pro,
right,
I didn't
proactive.
Right, so
then we go to crimes of omission or crimes of commission.
Right.
Not doing things has the same impact often for our community.
Right.
And, you know, Rachel Maddow did the big thing about this after President Obama made his announcements in support of marriage equality, that... Anyway, we have this long history of presidents who say one thing and do another.
Mm-hmm.
And so privately they say, oh, I like you. You know, I know you're gay, but I like you. Bring your partner to dinner. You know, come over and watch a movie at the White House. And then turn around and the next day announce something, you know, horrifically anti-gay. And they think that's okay. You know, and her point at the time was that here's a president who's been doing things to advance our equality all along in incremental ways for... You know, everybody in the alphabet of our acronyms, and he hasn't been touting it, and now he has. So he's made his public stance, you know, matches what he's actually been doing in terms of action. So,
and when you say the full alphabet, that is interesting because we hadn't mentioned that before you got here. I don't know if you were listening.
Oh, right.
You were probably listening to Morning Edition on another station.
No, I was not.
Oh, you were listening to us.
Patty's loyal.
I am completely loyal. Thank you, Cece.
Sure.
See what I put up with?
See, he stands up there with that microphone and it becomes a power tool.
Exactly.
I was just accusing her of, you know, whatever. One of the things we didn't talk about, and that usually isn't talked about, is... are advances, but advances that have been made by some of the other letters in the alphabet. One of them is the T. Obama's the first person to have appointed openly transgender people to his administration. That's huge.
That's huge.
When you're talking about employment non-discrimination, it's one thing to have a policy, and it's another thing to act on it. Proactively. I mean, this is one of those, oh, yes, we don't discriminate against transgender people. okay, so do you have any transgender employees? Well, no, but we don't discriminate against them. And it's another thing to say, well, yes, I appointed, and I can picture
Amanda
her.
Amanda Simpson.
Yeah. And there have been other appointments at other levels, at lower levels, but we've appointed this one, we've appointed that one. We have within our departments this one, and this one. And that's a completely different level. That's taking employment discrimination, non-discrimination, and embracing it.
And so many other things for the transgender community. You know, the issue of passports and the issue of Social Security, you know, a mismatch in contacting your employer. And, you know, there's so many things that I think that the list is pretty vast.
And the recent EEOC ruling, which actually now leapfrogs transgender community in terms of protection in the workplace.
Exactly.
Ahead of the rest of the alphabet, ahead of the L.
And explain that one.
Well, the ruling was that the EEOC would investigate claims and treat them under sex discrimination. There's a whole body of case law, gender discrimination and sex discrimination, and that transgender communities fall under that protection of the law. And so the EEOC will recognize that transgender employees in a lawsuit action or discrimination action would be protected under that body of case law, which stems out of Title 9 or 10, which I can't remember right now.
It's probably 9.
So, anyway, it's mm-hmm. incredibly significant. I may not be summarizing it that well, but it's a recognition and a legal protection that did not exist before.
Mm-hmm. And they have a federal remedy they can immediately tap, you know, whereas, you know, the gay and lesbian part of the alphabet, I suppose the B as well, you know, we don't have an avenue yet
mm-hmm.
to do that. Mm-hmm.
Over the last 2 weeks, there have been a couple of significant changes, approvals by the FDA that have to do with HIV. One of them is PrEP, and one of them is home testing. Let's talk about those for a little bit and the implications, because I don't think anybody who's been working with AIDS thinks either one is great. I don't think anybody thinks they're terrible. I think it's like, how do we deal with this? First of all, home testing. Tell us what that is, because that was approved last week.
Yeah, so it is approved. It's available now in the marketplace that you can buy a home testing kit for HIV. So someone in the privacy of their home can administer their own test and then get their results, either positive or negative, obviously.
Good things, more people will be tested. Maybe more. Some people who are tested fairly regularly will be tested more regularly. Those are good things.
Right.
What are the bad?
What's
the bad about it?
Some possible bads are, number one, I think the retail price is going to run around $40, so that's not available to everybody. Not everyone will be able to afford it. Number two, no HIV test is 100% accurate. And there are things that impact the accuracy of a test, like temperature. You need to do it right. And so that requires that, if you're going to follow instructions anyway, written, that you're literate and that you're able to understand them. So it's not super complicated, but yet they're not 100% accurate. So there is the possibility that someone wouldn't administer the test properly and they could get also a false answer. The test could show up negative when the person is not actually HIV negative. And imagine your joy if you are concerned that you might not be negative and your test says you are, and you might engage in risky behavior as a result of that, that you wouldn't engage in if you were aware that you were positive. Conversely, the test could show that you're positive when you're not. It can also show you're positive when you are. So I don't think it's an ideal situation when someone's sitting in their house, probably by themselves, not in a medical setting, and they get an HIV-positive test result. How do you cope with that information? Do you have resources to help with your treatment? Are you aware of facilities and services that could help you in that situation? that one's not always going to be a negative. There's, you know, multiple sides to this argument. What's great is if somebody didn't know they were HIV positive and the test is accurate and it shows that they are, then it's knowledge that they have, and then they can get themselves, you know, if they're motivated and able to take the next step, they can get to a medical provider and start asking the questions they need to ask and educate themselves.
So I would think the ideal situation is the person that comes to maybe Nelson Thibodeau, which is part of Resource Center Dallas. They go once a year for an HIV test, and maybe in between, every 6 months in between, they do a home test. They've been to a clinic before. They've discussed resources before. They probably understand safer sex better than somebody who's never tested before. And they have the access to the resources. That's probably the ideal person that this test is made for. And the one that isn't the ideal is the person who has never tested before, has no connection to any community, and really doesn't know where to turn.
Well, and I think that's part of it is a fear that I think many share, that it's misleading. Because if a person, say, that this is available, you could go to Walgreens and pick one up, and you go out and engage in risky behavior, and then you go the next day and get this box and bring it home and perform the test, and, oh, I'm negative, and then don't think about it again. Well, that's without any context of education. This person now believes they're HIV negative and possibly will be HIV negative in the future, you know, and kind of disregard their own risky behavior when, in fact, they wouldn't show positive
the next
morning.
Your antibodies to the HIV virus don't show up for a while, so to take a test the next day wouldn't be helpful. And, you know, we start to get all technical and medical here. Well, it's a virus. It is technical and medical. And a lot of people could be accessing these tests and really have no idea what that means, like Patty's scenario, to take the test. There's another thing to think about, too, which also has pros and cons. You know, we're sitting here in a major metropolitan area, and most of the United States does not, so many people in the United States are in rural areas and do not have the same access to medical services that you do in a major metropolitan area.
And so, education.
Correct. So it really cuts both ways in that type of a setting. Number one, you have somebody who could be 200 miles away from a health clinic. They're not going to talk to their own primary medical care doctor about HIV. And so for them, it'd be great to go to Walgreens and take this test. But conversely, they may not have the information or any support system to get them through a positive or a negative result. You know, it's really a mixed bag.
And that's true for straight people and gay people as well. You know, I think it really does cut both ways.
Sure, for straight people, they're not hooked into the HIV community in the same way. A lot of the HIV services were created in the gay community. They're available to everybody, but they were created by the gay community, so they don't have that linkage to care, and that's a real concern.
There need to be, like, tons of business cards stuffed into this packaging, you know, well, that show numbers you can call.
Part of the approval, was part of the approval, that there has to be quite a bit of documentation in there. So they're not just selling you the kit, they're also selling you this booklet that says call this number, in this area you can call, and that has to be there with it. It's a matter of, do you read it? You can't force somebody to read it.
Somebody getting home, ripping it open, doing the, moderately reading the instructions.
You know, I think one of the advantages.
I hate to read documentation.
But I think one of the advantages of it costing $40 or $50 is, you know, it's not like you just spent $5. Okay, I'll take the test. Okay, throw it out. You know, I just spent $40. I'm not going to spend $40 without taking it seriously, I hope. Although I did have one person who I've discussed this with who said that when he was diagnosed as positive, he said, that's not something I want to have learned on my own. And he was diagnosed more than 10 years ago. He's doing fine. He had access to care. He understood. He said it was real nice having somebody there holding my hand when he told me. So, you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and with CeCe Cox from Resource Center Dallas. We'll be back with more right after this.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
Want to find out about upcoming events at KNON? Want to see pictures from past events or need information about the station? Then you need to like the official KNON Facebook page. It's easy to find. Just go to facebook.com/KNON893. It's the KNON 89.3 FM station-produced page for Facebook. It's the easiest way to keep up with what's going on here at KNON. Like us and share with your friends today. That's facebook.com/KNON893. Accept no substitutions.
Hey, Blues fans, Sonny Boy Mark from Texas Blues Radio here inviting you to the third annual KNON Harmonica Blowout, Sunday, July 29th at Poor David's Pub in Dallas. For this year's show, we have, just back from another European tour, Delta Groove recording artist and harmonica player extraordinaire R.J. Michaud. From right here in our own backyard, the legendary Hash Brown Band with very special guests, the one and only Mike Morgan. We'll have a harmonica maestro himself, Mr. Paul Harrington, and his band, Kent Viceroy and the Super Kings, with special guest, former Marsha Ball guitarist Pat Boyack. Also, the David Vincent and John Ellis Band, and the KNON All-Stars, featuring KNON Blues DJs J-Mac and yours truly, Sonny Boy Mark, with special guest, Blues Music Award winner and former Zach Harmon harp man Jeff Stone. Barbecue dinner will be provided by the good folks at Backcountry Barbecue. Doors open at 4:30. Show begins at 5 p.m. Advance tickets available online at KNON.org or at Bill's Records in Dallas and at Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie. That's the third annual KNON Harmonica Blowout, Sunday, July 29th at Poor David's Pub, located at 1313 South Lamar in Dallas. It will blow you away.
KNON is proud to announce the release of Texas Blues Radio Volume 5, our latest blues compilation CD to benefit community radio and sponsored by Forever Young Records. This CD features 15 tracks and 60 minutes of great original Dallas-Fort Worth blues from artists like Tutu Jones, Blues Boy Bo, Buddy Whittington, Andrea Dawson, Kirkland James, Sonny Colley, Johnny Red and the Roosters, the Chris Watson Band, the Two Tones, the Rough Cut Blues Band, Jeff Stone and Charlie Love, Dave Millsap, Sir Loin and the Ass Kicking Machine, Michael J. and the Paul Bird Band, and J&J and the Detonators. The CD is strictly limited to 1,000 copies and will never be reissued. Get your copy now at Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie, Record Town in Fort Worth, Fools Records in Dallas, and Rewind Music. The CD is available as a download at KNON.org. All proceeds benefit KNON Community Radio. For more info on Texas Blues Radio Volume 5, visit us online at KNON.org.
You look like a movie star in one of them fancy Broadway shows.
Hi, this is Candy Markham, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. Listen.
And this is Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here with the late Patty Fink, and our guest today is Cece Cox. She's the CEO and Executive Director of Resource Center Dallas. We were just talking about, just a variety of things. Champions of Change. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. So the White House had a program called Champions of Change in which videos could be submitted and community groups or individuals across the United States would be selected and then recognized. And there's an organization that's national called CenterLink. And because Resource Center Dallas includes a community center, we are a member of that. The CenterLink organization is around 25 years old. Mm-hmm. I'm on the national board. And it exists to help support and grow and sustain community centers.
And like most national organizations, is headed by somebody from Dallas.
Ah, that's right. There you go. Terry Stone is the ED. Yeah. Exactly. He used to be here at Oakland Community Services and other places. He's such a great guy. So good Texas roots in that organization or relationships. And CenterLink has measured, there's various studies that have been done, 1.7 million people are involved through their community centers, LGBT community centers across the United States. So it's really the most impactful way in a broad scale to get people involved at a grassroots level and sort of a coordinated effort. So anyway, CenterLink was selected as a champion of change, and tomorrow the White House recognizes some of those champions, and you can view the videos. I can look up the website, but our time, I think it's 9:30 a.m. tomorrow, July the 19th.
When you find it, send the link to me. I'll put it on the LambdaWeekly.com website.
Okay, great.
Good. That's a nice little link. I've been a community center person ever since I was in college, and I know I've said this before. When I was in school, one of the professors at our school up in Albany, New York, bought an old brownstone. Now, that area had just been, like, devastated because they put up these new state office buildings. And so the rest of the community from all this construction had really been, leveled. But the brownstones that were left around these buildings, at the time you could pick them up for like $10,000, and they're worth several hundred thousand now. So we bought one, and that became the very first gay and lesbian community center in the country. And when I was in college, what we were doing, we were busy replacing stairs, and we were replacing walls and all kinds of other stuff. And we put it together. That became the first community center in the country.
That's
and it's still there.
Fantastic.
They're still using that building.
Oh,
so every time I've been up in New York and I've gone in there, it's like, I know those stairs. I built those.
Yeah. So, well, you've had a few things to do with community centers in your history.
Yeah.
Sounds like the Family Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that old story of the father hands the family hammer to the son and says, you know, this is the family hammer, son. It's been in our family for generations and generations. Mm-hmm. And I want you to pass it on to your son.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had to replace the head a few times and the handle a few times, but it's been in the family a long time. Keep it going.
Right. That's a good one.
Resource Center Dallas and the Gay and Lesbian Community Center is coming up on its 30th anniversary. 1983 was a big year. It's the year KNON went on the air. It's when Lambda Weekly went on the air. In fact, we'll celebrate our 29th anniversary in 2 weeks. Oldest, longest-running gay and lesbian show in the country. Resource Center Dallas, not as old as the Albany Gay and Lesbian Community Center, but again, one of the oldest in the country, older than San Francisco's, older than Los Angeles, older than New York, older than, I think, Chicago. Or about the same time as one or two of those. But 30 years, Dallas Voice will be 30 years in 83.
The Pride Parade's going to be 30 next year.
Pride Parade will be 30 next year, right. What was going on in 1983? I mean, Patty wouldn't remember. She was barely
was
out of diapers, right?
Yeah, right. You know. I don't know. My head just starts bobbing to disco music when I hear the word 1983. There should be some soundtrack going on. Well, the world was about to change as we know it in Dallas, Texas. I think people had heard about HIV and some AIDS cases, although wasn't called AIDS at the time, I guess referred to as GRID, gay-related immune deficiency disease, coming out of New York and San Francisco. But that doesn't mean there wasn't a case in Dallas in 1983, because I believe that there was, but it wasn't really known what was going on. And then,
and it was kind of believed at the time that maybe, you know, it's just in those areas, it's not going to come here.
Right. And also, I think, not believed. Like, it's a government conspiracy and somebody's making this up to suppress the gays and keep us from doing all kinds of things. So all sorts of mixed reaction there and disbelief. It was a hard thing. I could imagine it would be a really hard thing to wrap your mind around at that time.
I think there was one other belief at the time that we had just gone through, what is it called, Legionnaire's disease. And it took 2 weeks to find the cause and the cure for it. So we figured, okay, so this one will be tough. By the time it does get to Dallas, so we'll have whatever the medicine is we need to take care of it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So the organization was founded, and before AIDS came on the forefront, it was founded in response to discrimination. And you all know a lot of those stories, including that the Dallas police was taking down license plate numbers of people that were going into gay bars and then feeding the information to Dallas Times Herald and people getting at it in the paper at a time when that was a guaranteed you're going to lose your job and your family. So
And the great outcome of that, too, was the great Harriet Earhart and Juanita Craft, who frequented the bars at that time and would pull up in front in parks, so that their numbers would be included, their license plate numbers. And the, you know, Juanita Craft loved her buttermilk, so the bars would stock buttermilk, you know, in case Juanita came by.
Right. So our early straight supporters. Allies really stepped up at that time. And then in a greater context, we were criminals. 2106 was on the books in Texas, so it really
Patty
was
is still a criminal.
Patty is still a criminal. There's going to be a whole separate show on that.
Oh, yeah.
Litany of offenses.
Criminal history.
Begin discussing it today. But
that's awesome. You tell me which episode that's
going to
be.
We just want it on the record.
So out of that, the organization was founded in response to discrimination and in efforts to educate and advocate. And then HIV came onto the scene, and it became a matter in which education and advocacy was really necessary. It wasn't just a health issue, because what resulted was a huge amount of stigma and misinformation and discrimination against people at HIV, including Parkland Hospital not giving treatment for people who needed it. They would not administer what was available then, which was AZT, a missed treatment. So at the risk of their licensure and professional living, nurses did that at what is now the Nelson Thibodeau Clinic. It wasn't called that at the time, but a couple weeks ago, Penny Pickle told her story. She's a nurse, Penny Pickle Crispin, about administering AZT, and Bill Nelson, Terry Thibodeau were some of her patients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that all happened in 1983, but it's interesting that at the time KNON came on the air, Lambda Weekly started. That same year, Dallas Voice started. All these things were going on. AIDS, really, the very beginning of AIDS. While some people didn't believe it was going to happen here, while some people thought, well, maybe we need to do something about it, it really brought together the gay and lesbian community for the first time in a way that it had never been brought together before.
Oh, and we're always our best when we're pissed off. You know, I mean, we are. I mean, look at, you know, like we've watched the city, the community over in Fort Worth, you know, they can't keep a paper. You know, just trying to organize and, you know, get participation and stuff, and then wow, can they organize themselves when something happens? You know what I mean?
It's right, it's Rainbow that, Lounge.
Yeah, yeah, we're much better when we're pissed.
It's a motivator, that's for sure, right?
So, thank you for being here and pissing us off, Cece.
My pleasure. Likewise.
If there was one other thing I wanted to talk about. We were talking a little bit before about two things were approved this week. Last week, home testing was approved. This week, PrEP was approved. And we just have a few more minutes. I don't want to just leave that one dangling. What is PrEP?
Why don't you tell us what PrEP is, and I'll give you my opinion.
it is pre-exposure prophylactics.
Right.
Prophylaxis is what it stands for. And it involves taking a pill, usually Truvada, which is the most commonly prescribed pill for HIV, for controlling the virus. And it's giving that pill to people who are negative.
So, right. Right, and so with the goal being that it'll keep them negative. It's a preventative.
It's a preventative,
right. It's marketed as a preventative. So, again, just like the home testing issue, there are big pros and there are big cons. One of them is adherence. It works. PrEP, the data shows that PrEP works if you are adherent, and I mean 100% of the time. Well, any of us have taken prescriptions or supplements. I mean, really? You never miss a dose? I mean, come on. You know, I could.
Do you know, I've never been on a prescription, and I'm very conscious about doing a prescription if I have something wrong. I know I have a 2-week supply, and at the end of the 2 weeks, I always have a pill or two left over. Always. And I'm very conscious about I have to do this every day. Or twice a day, or whatever it is, I always end up with a pill or two left over. What's that about?
I mean, it's the same. Most people don't RSVP, you know. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's you miss these things. It doesn't mean you're not going to do it. It just means it's, you know, it's got a big gap in there where things can fall through.
Right. But PrEP doesn't work unless you take this pill daily. You have to do it.
Right. And there, so that's a danger there.
What are some of the other negatives with it?
there is a cost involved, and people have to have access to it. So again, how available are pharmaceuticals to you? Where do you live? Do you have the money to afford it?
Mm-hmm. Also, the pills are not without some other collateral damage to your body in some cases, not in all. It's but it can cause some liver damage, some kidney damage. And do you want to expose yourself to that if you are negative already? But what are the advantages? Who really should consider going on PrEP? It's not like everybody needs to protect themselves from HIV, even though, you know, Patty, you and Aaron are the only two who can stand each other. And, I mean, you two are in a long-term monogamous relationship.
And lesbians have the lowest incidence
mm-hmm. of HIV mm-hmm. of any group. So you would not be a good choice for this. Who would be?
Well, it's helpful potentially in a what's known as a serodiscordant couple, where one's HIV positive and one is HIV negative. So obviously the couple would want the HIV negative person to maintain their HIV negative status.
How about, are there cases where you can go on this for a short time, like you're just coming out of a relationship, you're just getting used to the idea of dating again, and while you're getting used to the idea of safe sex and keeping yourself safe, that you would do this for 3 months?
That's a situation where it would make sense for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, but you just sort of like we talked about with the testing, you can't rely on any one thing. Mm-hmm. The medicine may not be 100% effective, just like a condom's not 100% effective. There can be flaws, etc. So it's a preventative. Mm-hmm. It can be effective. But no one thing is 100% guarantee.
Right, right. Good. But interesting, using Truvada for PrEP was just approved this week. So right. Interesting development. And I guess it's one of those things that we'll just have to follow it and see how that actually does.
Yeah, so. You know, trials indicate one thing, and then as mm-hmm. it gets into the broader population, see what the side effects are, what the effectiveness are, and if mm-hmm. it all adds up to what the data indicated.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, that brings us to the end of the hour. I want to thank you for being with us, Cece.
Thanks for inviting me.
Come see us again in another 5-10 years.
You know where to find me.
I do know where to find you, unfortunately. So,
yeah, smack him.
Who's that unfortunate for?
I was going to smack him, by the way, when I walked in, because you were sitting across from him earlier.
Oh, yeah. I threatened that earlier, but I missed my chance.